Lunch was as good as advertised, despite the fact that pizza seemed somehow inappropriate for Christmas Day. Utina had an opportunity during this meal to observe the byplay between Griffin and the two mothers of his children. She wasn't sure what she'd been expecting, but it wasn't what she saw. The three of them were all completely at ease, without any trace of the sort of awkwardness one might expect from such a situation. In fact, there was something slyly humorous, almost conspiratorial, about the interactions between Skuld and Kay, as though they were the only two people in the universe who knew the punchline of a very funny joke, and they were feeling smug about it. Utina spent several thoughtful minutes wondering why this seemed familiar to her, but couldn't pin it down. She didn't have time to ponder it much after lunch. Corwin gave her a tour of his workshop complex, which was impressive, if slightly surreal. They found Dorothy in the medical section, performing routine maintenance on the Medicom 3000. "Dorothy, could you come here for a second?" said Corwin. The robot girl stopped in her work, turned to look at him, then crossed the room and stood, expressionless, waiting. "I failed to introduce myself yesterday," Dorothy said suddenly, looking at Utina. "I'm R. Dorothy Wainwright. I apologize for the oversight." "It's all right," said Utina, feeling a little uncomfortable under Dorothy's steady, dark gaze. "Is there something you need, Corwin?" Dorothy asked. Corwin asked her to accompany them to the control room, which she did without demur. This room was an office-like space with several computer consoles in it, the nerve center of the lab, and the Christmas tree standing in the corner looked a bit out of place amid the white and chrome. Corwin went to the tree and picked up one of the two packages underneath it, turned, and handed it to Dorothy with a smile. "Merry Christmas, Dorothy," he said. Dorothy's face changed very subtly. She still didn't have much of an expression, but there was something different about it, a slight softening around the eyes, the faintest hint of color in the bridge of her nose. It wasn't much, but Utina spotted it and smiled a little to herself. With quick, economical precision, Dorothy divested her gift of its wrapping paper, revealing it to be a book, large and leather-bound. Utina couldn't tell what it was. The markings on the cover were in a language she couldn't read. Dorothy opened it to look at the title page, and a slip of yellow paper fell out of it. She caught it before it could reach the floor, examined it, then carefully tucked it back into the book. "Thank you," she said, her voice, like her face, slightly softer than usual. She went to the tree herself and removed the other item, then handed it to Corwin. "This is for you." Corwin unwrapped his present and grinned with delight. "Hey, cool. I've been wanting a new one of these for a while now." He removed the device, whatever it was, from its packaging. It looked like a fountain pen, but Utina suspected it wasn't, then clipped it into the top pocket of his outer shirt. He smiled, put his hand on Dorothy's shoulder, and then kissed her on the forehead, which actually raised the slightest hint of a blush in her cheeks. "Thanks," he said softly. "Merry Christmas," she replied, a little shyly. Utina, who was starting to feel a bit of a voyeur, went and busied herself looking at one of the computer displays, which seemed to be running a real-time tactical display of the airship traffic above a couple of blocks of downtown. "I'm sorry," said Dorothy, and Utina realized she was being addressed. She turned around, a puzzled look on her face. "For what?" she asked. "I didn't know you would be here," Dorothy told her, "so I didn't get you anything."
"I wasn't able to get anything for you either," Utina replied, a little embarrassed. "I only met you yesterday, and I didn't have an opportunity."
She grinned encouragingly. "We'll just have to do it the next time, huh?"
"If you insist," said Dorothy. Then she turned and left the room.
"That went well," Corwin said, and it took Utina a moment to realize that he wasn't being sarcastic. "I know it's hard to tell, but I think she likes you." "You know," he went on,
I've been thinking about what you said this morning about sending her to school. I know you were joking, but I wonder if it might really help. Well, I suppose you could ask her. I don't really understand how that sort of thing works. There aren't any robots back home. Corwin sat down, gestured her to a chair, and did his best to explain the somewhat dysfunctional lot of robots and androids in modern galactic society. What it boiled down to was that Dorothy, not having been certified as a sentient life form by the Turing Institute, was not a person in the legal sense of the word. She had no civil rights, no standing at all in society. So, she's just your property, Utina observed. Like a toaster. Corwin nodded. Yeah. She gave him a scowl. I thought you were better than that, she said in a tone that combined anger and disappointment, and she started to get up. Whoa, whoa, said Corwin, spreading his hands. I don't like it any more than you do, but there's nothing I can do about it myself. I don't follow you, Utina replied, but she sat down and listened anyway. Or are you just going to say that society is to blame? Well, in a way, it's nothing better than slavery. I agree, I do. But it's a thorny issue galaxy-wide right now. The social system for sentient artifacts is broken. There is a way out for Dorothy, but it requires her to take action herself, and, well, so far she's refused to do it. What is it? There's a regulating body for artificial sentience, Corwin told her. The Turing Institute, on Turing 3. A robot seeking emancipation can go before the Institute board and be tested, and if the tests are passed, that's it. The robot is declared a free intelligence, with all the rights and responsibilities thereof. Could Dorothy pass? Asked Utina. Oh, without question, Corwin answered, unhesitating. She doesn't act it, but Dorothy is a lot more human than a number of regular people I know. She'd pass, but she won't go. What? Why not? I don't know exactly, said Corwin helplessly. Every year I suggest it. Every year I send in the sponsorship form. The yellow paper in the book I gave her was the certified copy of this year's. It gives her 6 months to contact the board and schedule an appearance to be tested. I have to file that first because I'm her owner. A robot can't file for emancipation without its owner's sponsorship. No legal rights, you see. It's a vicious cycle. So if a robot's owner wants to keep it in bondage... Yeah, I said the system is broken. There are reform efforts put forward every couple of years, but... Corwin shrugged. Robot rights aren't high on anybody's list of priorities, with the telepath situation and the whole species isolation movement and whatnot. Anyway, I sponsor her, but she won't go. She says there'd be no point, and I can't budge her. Couldn't you order her to go? Corwin blinked. You know, I never thought of that. I suppose I could, but that's just it. I don't want to give her orders, and I don't know how she'd take it. She might take it as a rejection, and I'm all she has. But if she were certified... I know... And I wish like hell she'd just go and get it done with, but it's like she doesn't want to be her own person. She'd rather just stay down here, keep the place running, and look after me when I visit. Utina gave him a sly smile. Maybe she's got a crush on you, she said. Maybe, Corwin allowed, failing to blush only because his mind was occupied with the technical details of the problem. I did rescue her from a pretty bad situation years ago. Even if she does, though, she never gives any indication, because it's improper for a simple robot to make that kind of advance. That's really sad. What a stupid system. Yeah, tell me about it. Anyway, what I was thinking was, if I could get her to go to the W with you guys for a while, maybe she'd realize that there's a world outside these tunnels and people in it other than me, and then she'd want to be certified and go out and live in it. Utena considered. "That might be worth a shot," she said after a few minutes' thought. "It worked for somebody I knew at my old school. She wasn't a robot, but similar situation." She shrugged. "At any rate, it probably couldn't hurt. But if she's not a legal person, how do you enroll her in a school?"
"She has my sponsorship document," Corwin said. "That means the Institute has looked at the data I provided and determined that it's at least worth testing her. I think WPI would take her, at least on a trial basis, on the way to that. They'd probably want her certified before the end of the sponsorship period, but that's after the end of this school year anyway. And someone actually at the school would have to take responsibility for her, since I won't be there. I'd have to make a formal loan of her to some enrolled student."
Utena examined the situation and sighed wryly.
"Life is a circle," she said.
"What?"
"Nothing. Forget it. I'm sure one of us could handle that. If not me, I don't know much about that kind of thing, then Kate or Miki. He's a fast learner and good with tech stuff."
She shrugged.
"Ask her and see what happens."
"Yeah. Yeah, I think I will."
Corwin got to his feet. "She's due for routine maintenance tomorrow. I'll ask her then. Meantime, I think Len was trying to put together another sledding run, and I missed the last one," he added with a grin. The rest of Christmas Day was a blur of fun. There was indeed another trip to the sledding hill before it got too dark. Then Christmas dinner at 105. This was not as sumptuous an affair as Aiko Rose's Christmas Eve feed, but good all the same, and a bit more intimate, with just the family around the smaller round table in the house's seldom-used dining room. After that, Kate and Miki decided to go caroling, and dragooned Utena, Leonard, Corwin, and Nall into accompanying them, Utena protesting all the way to the street that she couldn't sing. She forgot about that when they got into it, though, and they made the round of the neighborhood, brightening Christmas night a little bit for Griffin and Kay's neighbors. They got back to the house at around 10, and, having had an early morning and another full day, they went to their beds content and slept the sleep of the just. The next morning, Utena woke early, got up, showered and dressed without waking Kate, and went downstairs, wondering if anyone else was even awake yet. It was only 9, after all, and around here that was practically the wee hours of the morning. She found Zoner in the den, reading. As she entered and sat down in the red leather wingback chair across from him, he flipped the attached ribbon bookmark into the book and set it on the arm of the chair.
"How did you know?" she asked him bluntly.
"Know what?" Zoner replied.
"About Miki, that he could help Kate."
"I didn't."
"Then how did he get here?"
Zoner shrugged. "I had nothing to do with it."
Utena gave him a skeptical look. "Come on, who else could have done it? You brought me here."
"No, I didn't," Zoner told her.
11:45 p.m. Eastern Time, Tuesday, August 24th, 2404. Bancroft Tower, Worcester, Massachusetts. Megazone, Experts of Justice field agent, former Wedge Defense Force commander, and occasional avatar of chaos, was fairly certain his presence here at Bancroft Tower had the most to do with the third thing on that list. He was accustomed to being tugged hither and yon by the ebbs and flows of the twisted fate he called his own, but this was kind of an odd place for him to find himself anyway. Not that he disliked Bancroft Tower, far from it. Still, he hadn't been here in years, and it was kind of strange that he'd decided at random to wander up here tonight and look at the city. He stood with his elbows on a crenellation of one of the miniature turrets that flanked the walkway to the tower, looking over the shifting lights of Worcester, finding amusement in how little the city, except for the very core of downtown, which was now somewhat taller than he remembered it, had been allowed to change in the 400 years he had known it. For a conurbation that had been leveled by atomic fire twice, it looked remarkably as it had when he had first arrived in 1989. For that matter, so did he, but in his case the appearance was a lie. He was about to write off whatever strange inspiration had brought him here and go home when there was a bright flash of light and a strange electric noise from behind him. Unconcerned, he turned, hands in the pockets of his black leather trench coat, and looked toward the source of the light. In the pavement under the arch of Bancroft Tower's two halves, there was a circular, slightly dished, smoking depression that stretched almost from one side of the tower to the other. In the center of that depression was a girl. Zoner blinked, took a few steps closer, and had a closer look. Yes, a girl, definitely, no question about it. In her middle teens, he thought, hard to tell in this light, lying curled in a fetal position on her side in the middle of the crater. Steam rose silently from her rather tattered black and red clothes and her long pink hair. Zoner frowned thoughtfully, sniffing at the air. Roses? He murmured. Then, snapping back to the business at hand, he stepped into the crater, knelt down next to her, and put a couple of fingers to the side of her throat. Okay, fine. A live girl, that's better than the alternative. And very pretty, too, he noticed in an abstracted sort of way. He straightened up, brushing dust from his knees, and frowned down at her. Damn shame, he observed, folks throwing away a perfectly good white girl like that. With a soft pop, someone else appeared under the arch as well. Zoner took a half step back, uttering a not too distressed, "Whoa," as he did so, and regarded the newcomer with puzzlement. The new arrival was a short man, very short, about 2 feet short, in elaborate robes, with a stiff ruff of gray hair and a youthful face that didn't match it. Either he had a horn in the middle of his forehead, or that was some kind of weird headdress he was wearing. He held a gnarled wooden staff with a sort of beaked curl at the top, and regarded Zoner with a look of pained intensity. "Beloved of Eris, walker in discord, hear me," he declared, and then flickered like a badly tuned video image. Zoner blinked, realized belatedly that he could see right through the little guy. "The girl before you is named Utena Tenjo. On the calendar of your world, her date of birth would be December 29th, 2389. You will need that information if you are to establish her in your codified electronic society." "If I..." Zoner began, but the illusory midget cut him off. "There is no time," he barked. "Listen to me carefully, Chaos Walker. That girl is the last hope of an entire world, but her destiny is incomplete. She must be guarded, kept safe and well. I know you have the power to do this. You must..." Suddenly the little man flinched, looking off to his left with an expression of horror, and vanished. "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope," Zoner muttered to himself. He stood scowling at the place where the little man had just been, then at the girl, then at the spot again. Then, with a put-upon sort of sigh, he bent and scooped her up in his arms. She didn't react, but even as deadweight, she wasn't all that heavy. Or maybe he was just forgetting how strong he was. Either way, he straightened easily, looked around, and said in a sing-song tone, "Eris?" A pause. "Eris!" Nothing. "Eris!" A young woman with shaggy blonde hair, ratty jeans, and a leather jacket with an American Volunteer Group blood chit on the back sloped out from behind the other turret. "What?" she asked, sounding a little annoyed. "Is this one of yours?" said Zoner, gesturing toward Eris with the young girl in his arms. Eris sauntered the rest of the way over to the edge of the crater, brushed the girl's long pink hair away from her sleeping face, looked, and shrugged. "Nope. Never seen her before. Cute, though. Where'd you get her?" "She just appeared," Zoner said, "in a flash of light." "Oh, so the usual." "Pretty much, except for the magic midget." "Midget?" "Well, the image of one. Little guy about so high. Funny staff with a beak, robes too big for him." Eris sighed. "Clef." "Who?" "Clef, Master Mage of Sephiro, what did he say?
Zoner cleared his throat, then proceeded with a passable clef impression.
Beloved of Eris, walker in discord, hear me. The girl before you is named Utena Tenjo. On the calendar of your world, her date of birth would be December 29th, 2389. You will need that information if you are to establish her in your codified electronic society.
Zoner shifted back to his own voice. Then I said, if I? Then he said, Zoner shifted back to his very best clef.
There is no time. Listen to me carefully, Chaos Walker. That girl is the last hope of an entire world, but her destiny is incomplete. She must be guarded, kept safe and well. I know you have the power to do this. You must!
Zoner returned to his own voice. Then he recoiled as if he were about to be struck and vanished.
Thank you. That's very complete of you. What the hell is going on over there?
Eris mumbled, talking to herself rather than Zoner.
She stood for a while looking down at Utena, then looked up to her minion.
Well, I guess you better do what he told you.
Zoner blinked.
Just like that?
The 10th world is in a mess, Eris told him, and the Council of the Aesir is still trying to figure out what to do about it. They'll probably end up sticking some poor jerk with going there and finding out as a trial of ascension. Until then, just do what Clef said. Put her somewhere safe and keep this whole thing on the QT. I'll see what I can find out, but don't get her hopes up.
Zoner looked down at Utena for a moment, then sighed.
Man, I don't have time for this, he muttered. Okay, I'll do what I can.
Great, you're a sport, said Eris sardonically. She turned and headed back toward the turret she'd come past.
See you around.
No kiss? Asked Zoner plaintively, but she was gone.
Bitch, he added in mock anger.
Zoner sighed again and walked away, carrying his unusual burden.
Then I took you to the Crown Plaza and put you to bed, and, well, you know the rest.
So it was the midget? Clef? She wondered.
I don't know about that, said Zoner. I got the impression he was surprised by it, too. He didn't seem like he'd just done what he was warning me about, more like he was witnessing it.
Utena frowned thoughtfully.
Well, if it wasn't him, and it wasn't you, who could it have been?
You didn't see anybody working a banishment on you before you left, did you?
No. But things were awfully confused there at the end, and I don't know much about that sort of thing. There were the swords.
She shook her head.
It's all a big jumble. I can't make sense of it.
Zoner looked thoughtful for a second, then said,
Hang on, let's look at this from another angle. Thursday night, when you went to sleep, what were you thinking about?
How much I hate what's happened to Kate. She replied immediately, in a tone that made it clear she thought that should be obvious.
You wanted to help her?
Of course. She's my friend. The best friend I have here.
Did you think of your other friend, Mickey? You asked me how I knew he could help her. The way you said it, seems like you'd already thought of it.
She thought back, then nodded.
Yeah, now that you say it, I did. Just before I dropped off, I could see him, almost feel him there.
And the next day, here he is, said Zoner. Don't you think that's suggestive?
Of what?
Think about it. Has anything like this ever happened before?
Of course it,
Utena began, then skidded to a verbal halt as she realized what he was saying.
Sionji, he murmured.
Then she shook her head.
That's stupid. Even if I had a power like that and didn't know it, why would I wish for Sionji to come and beat me up?
Kate told me you were sick with the flu, had come down with it the night before. Fever does odd things to dreams.
Utena considered it. I did have a dream that night. A nightmare, really. My first duel was with Sionji. I thought his sword was fake. Didn't realize I could get hurt, even killed. I think I dreamed about that. I'm not sure. I can't remember it very well, but I remember waking up, thinking he would be... She trailed off, then said in a slower, more thoughtful tone, "Right there." "I think," Megazone said after a moment's thought, "we may have this surrounded." "No," said Utenum, shaking her head again. "No, there's a hole. You're thinking it's dreams, powerful images, bringing people I know across from Sephiro?" "As a working hypothesis, it beats sunspots," he replied. "You were dueling for a great power, right? Well, I think maybe you picked up your prize package on the way out." "Then there's a hole," she repeated. "I dream of Himemia every night. Every night I wish for her to be with me. So if your theory is true, then where is she?" Zoner shrugged. "Maybe something else is preventing her from coming across." "Like what?" she challenged him. "How should I know?" he replied. "Maybe whatever Clef was trying to warn me about. I'm not a sorcerer, I'm a chaos walker, and I'm hardly an authority on the 10th world. I only know what you and Eris have told me in passing. It's supposed to be a pretty weird place, and from what you've told me about your friend, she's not exactly your average citizen. Who knows what kind of intersections of power might be blocking your... whatever you're doing. Damn it, I wish the midget had finished what he was trying to say. It might have given me a clue. I wonder what the hell happened to him." "Do you think you can find out?" He shrugged again. "I can try. Eris told me to keep it as quiet as possible and not make any promises I might not be able to keep, and it's way outside my field, but... I'll see what I can do. First, I need to square things away for your friend Miki, though, since it seems he's going to be with us for the duration. But after that, well, we'll see. What'll you do in the meantime?" "Get an education," Utrina replied. "Try to learn as much as I can about where I am and how I might be able to get back. Hope." Zoner nodded. "That's good." He got up, stretched himself a little, and smiled at her. "You have," he remarked as he went to the hallway door, "great strength and nobility, especially for someone so young. Hold on to them, never lose them, and they'll see you through anything." He didn't know why that statement made her look at him so strangely. She sat looking at the door he'd left through for several minutes, pondering that, before sighing and going to the kitchen to rustle herself some cereal. No formal gathering for breakfast today. People were taking the day at its own pace, getting up whenever, doing whatever. Len and the twins disappeared almost immediately on waking. So did Griffin and Kay, heading into the city for some ill-explained purpose. Corwin, worn out by 2 all-nighters in a row and a very busy Christmas day, was still sacked out, and Nall, when he sloped into the kitchen and mooched some sausage while Utrina was working on her toast, opined that he would remain that way for some time. Kate wandered in, yawning, still in her pajamas, and had some Rice Krispies. Miki took more time to appear, since he didn't come down until he'd finished washing up and dressing. He looked odd to Utrina, dressed in regular clothes. She was so used to seeing him in his student council uniform that the image of the uniform itself had become wedded to the image of him in her mind, and she kept wondering who he was when he first appeared in the room. They chatted about this and that over breakfast. Utrina kept her discussion with Zoner to herself, not wanting to drop it on Miki until he had the opportunity to finish absorbing what had happened to him. His reading of the book Kate had given him had been interrupted by the bustle of the holiday, but today looked like it was going to be quiet enough for him to finish it. Indeed, after breakfast, the 4 of them retired to the den. Utrina took up her favorite position in her favorite chair with her favorite dragon, and made a stab at finishing Beat to Quarters. Miki wound up reading the last of So You've Just Arrived on the couch while Kate lay on the floor nearby, propped up on her elbows, going over some sheet music. Miki finished reading, closed the book, and looked across the den at Utrina. "I'm not sure why I believe it," he said with a puzzled note in his voice. "But I do." "I had the same reaction," Utrina said, It's like it's so strange, it can't help but be true. But if it is, then how did I get here? That's kind of hard to say, Utina hedged. Zoner seems to think I did it. Miki blinked. How? With the power we were all dueling for. The blue-haired boy scowled, irritated not with her, but with a memory. The power wasn't what I was dueling for. Well, no. Me neither, if you'll recall, said Utina Riley. Anyway, Zoner thinks I got it, and it's doing weird things to the universe when I have really vivid dreams about people I know back home. I'm not convinced, but there are signs he might be right. She told him about Sionji. So that's where he went, Miki mused. He just up and disappeared last week. Nanami found his camping gear out in the Forest of Secrets. It was like he'd just gotten up and walked away in the middle of the night. But then he's been acting weird ever since... Miki trailed off, his brow furrowing in concentration. Ever since... Arg! Something happened to us before then, something important. Why can't I remember? He pounded his forehead with the heel of his hand. Whoa, whoa, don't hurt yourself, Utina protested. It's okay, you'll think of it. By us, you mean the student council, I suppose? Yes. He shook his head. A couple of weeks ago, before finals week started, we had an unscheduled meeting, but I can't remember what it was about. It's just... gone. Utina gave Kate a troubled look, but her tone and manner were cheery as she told him, don't worry about it. It'll come back to you if it was important. I hope so, Miki replied, not sounding completely convinced. So, if you don't know for certain how I got here, then am I stuck here? Utina faltered, looking down. I think so. Oh, said Miki, his expression unreadable. I see. Utina hung her head. I'm sorry, Miki. If Megazone's right, it's my fault. Miki glanced up at her, saw her miserable expression, and smiled, a bit wanly, but bravely all the same. Cheer up, Utina, he said brightly. You're looking for a way back, right? You must be, if you're here and Miss Himemiya is still there, after everything you went through for her sake. Well, yeah. I mean, I would be. If I had any idea where to start, I'm still trying to get my bearings. Miki's smile did not flag. Then I won't worry, he said. Utina blinked at him as if startled by his declaration, and he responded cheerfully, Have you ever failed yet? Even if it takes you years, you'll succeed in this. I have faith in you, and I'll help you any way I can. His smile became a little sentimental as he added, After all, I want to see Miss Himemiya happy, too. Miki, said Utina softly, her face going blank with astonishment. Then it crystallized into a look of determination, and she nodded firmly. Right! Then she grinned. What the hell, with you on my side, how can I lose? This world has a civilization that spans a galaxy. She went back across the room and plunked down in her chair. All I need is for you to learn their science, and we'll be home in time for the prom. Well, said Miki, his smile becoming a bit nervous. Relax, I'm kidding, said Utina. Well, sort of. That probably is our best chance at getting home. Lucky I ended up going to a good school here, too, and fell in with a good group. She added with a grin at Kate, who had spent the whole conversation so far absorbed in checking and timing the revised score. She looked up and smiled, revealing that she'd been paying attention regardless. I'm sure Miki will be welcome at the W, Kate agreed, if he wants to come. She smiled. Say... All you have to do now is summon one more of your old classmates, and we'll finally have enough people for baseball.
Right, Utrina replied wryly, because I'm sure we'll be able to get Sayanji to play next time we see him.
That's really puzzling, Miki mused. Before whatever happened at that last meeting, he seemed to have made his peace. Well, you saw him before you went to claim the power, remember?
Utena nodded.
Yeah, he was almost like an actual person. Toga was still a twink, though.
Toga never really got any better, Miki admitted. But Sayanji, he came to the council barbecue on the last night and was more or less normal.
I wish I could remember what happened.
You had a barbecue? Utena inquired incredulously. I'm up the freaking bell tower getting my mind turned inside out, and you bastards are having kebabs?
Man, with friends like these.
What? Said Miki, puzzled.
Forget it, Utena replied with a dismissive wave. Take too long to explain.
She shook her head and muttered to herself, A barbecue, my God.
Miki didn't have much to say to that. He would have liked to ask, just what did happen to you that day? But that would have been tactless, and Miki Kaworu was not tactless. Instead, he shrugged and said rather lamely,
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
If you are coming back with us, Kate mused, we'll need to make arrangements and come up with a cover story. We can't just tell Miss Montaigne that Utena accidentally summoned you from a parallel dimension.
I don't have any records, Miki said, as if it had just occurred to him. Would they even admit me?
You have to take a test, Utena said. It's tough, but hey, I passed. Even skipped a grade. You shouldn't have any trouble.
She laughed. They might just hand you a diploma and show you the door. Then you'd have to figure out what to do with yourself all over again.
Miki smiled. I hope not.
What was it like? Who would I have to talk to?
Utena put down her book and settled back, scratching Nall's ears, and told him.